We are going to start this morning with Michael Woolford and Brandy Cinco. Woodford, sorry, Michael. Michael is an associate professor of social work with Wilfrid Laurier University in Ontario, Canada. His research examines the nature and consequences of contemporary heterosexism with a focus on the role of experiential and psychological campus climate on LGBTQ college students' mental and physical health and academic success. Alongside interest in the effects of heterosexism, he also studies socio-ecological protective factors that can foster students' resilience. And Brandy Cinco is a statistician and programmer analyst at the University of Michigan. She has a bachelor's degree in engineering from the University of Michigan, a master's in mathematics from Eastern Michigan, and a second master's in statistics from Colorado State. She's been involved in a wide variety of health and social service research, and this is her first presentation on LGBT research. And just a quick plug for Brandy. Brandy has run the website of the LGBT Caucus for many, many years. So, Michael and Brandy.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Very happy to be here to talk about our work. We tried to come up with a sexy title, and we came up with using structural equation modeling to explain mediating effects, so on and so forth. And I would like to give a shout out also to our other collaborators, Alex Kulik and Jun Sung Hong. We have no relationships to disclose. As was noted in the introduction, this is part of an overall framework of study that is really trying to advance minority stress model research by looking at more subtle forms of heterosexism and genderism amongst LGBTQ college students. Our talk today is specifically focusing on sexual minority students, thus the parentheses, and we're also very much interested in looking at what are those socio-ecological factors that may be functioning as protective factors. Today's talk is going to be looking at one particular level of that. So we certainly know that discrimination matters. We think about the story of Tyler Clemente, the undergraduate study a student at Rutgers University, who took his life a few years ago, sadly. But certainly research highlights the fact that for sexual minority students, psychological distress and other mental health issues tend to be higher among sexual minority students compared to their heterosexual peers. Certainly consistent with minority stress framework is that studies do demonstrate and suggest that discrimination, heterosexism, tends to explain some of those differences, so maybe underlying and contributing to those differences. Until recently, the research has tended to highlight more blatant forms of discrimination, such as being threatened, physically assaulted, being verbally threatened, and certainly those forms of victimization have been associated with things like lower self-esteem, greater psychological distress, and higher suicidality. Excuse me. On a positive note, previous research also suggests that self-esteem can mediate that relationship between victimization and distress. We're trying to take that research a bit further by looking at various forms of discrimination. Certainly when we think about subtle discrimination, our own campuses, and certainly thinking more broadly, one of the popular concepts that's entered the discourse is the concept of microaggressions, which is what we're focusing on. But we certainly know from other research that really contemporary heterosexism tends to be expressed in non-assaultive, more subtle kinds of ways. My colleague Sue Rankin and other colleagues in their national study highlighted the fact that among students, sexual minority students who said that they had experienced some form of discrimination, we see that only about 4% reported physical violence, whereas things like derogatory marks were much more prevalent, so single incidents almost at 70%, deliberately ignored and feeling left out because of their sexual orientation. So as we can see, the nature, we tend to think about discrimination as being blatant, purposeful, but it certainly has changed. And as I said, one of the things that's really entered our discourse recently is the notion of microaggressions. And even though in the 70s it was first introduced with respect to racism, we're seeing it apply to other marginalized groups, including LGBT folks. So microaggressions, just to bring us all in the same place, can be understood as the everyday verbal, nonverbal, and environmental slights, snubs, or insults, whether intentional or unintentional. that communicate hostile, derogatory, or negative messages to target persons based on their marginalized group membership. So such as the phrase, "That's so gay," for example. In our study, we have, and in our broader work, we've developed a scale to measure microaggressions on college campuses. And two, we're using that scale in this study, two sample items. Looking at interpersonal microaggressions, I was told that being lesbian, gay, bisexual, or queer is just a phrase. So being the underlying message, there's something wrong. There's, you know, it's not a stable identity. Environmental, in my school, it's okay to make jokes about LGBTQ people. So when we think about sexual orientation microaggressions, we certainly know that they also have an effect. Qualitatively, studies have highlighted the fact that they tend to get under the skin, and students and other participants highlight the fact that they feel more stressed and having also negative health and well-being related to it. In an earlier study, myself and colleagues, we found that hearing the phrase, "That's so gay," tended to be associated with poor physical health symptoms and also feeling unaccepted on campus. It was not associated with self-esteem and anxiety in that particular study. So what we're trying to do is advance the research. One of the things in the campus climate literature is that there are a lot of campus climate studies. Maybe some of your own campuses have done engaged in such research, which is really important. Those studies tend to be descriptive. They tend not to really go into any kind of depth of knowledge. Of course, there are some exceptions, which is great. Because of that, we're only describing, we may get into some of the comparison groups, such as, you know, students of color may be more inclined to experience certain things, but really we don't know a lot about the antecedents and the outcomes of these forms of discrimination on college campuses, and especially with respect to microaggressions, and also we just don't really know a lot about resiliency as well and what those factors might be. So in our study today, we're aiming to talk about the antecedents. Based on previous research, we're hypothesizing that students with atypical gender identities, students of color, and men will report greater discrimination or greater heterosexism. We're interested in looking at what are the outcomes and the mediators. So we hypothesize that heterosexism on campus overall, which is a combination of various forms of heterosexism, is positively associated with psychological distress and negatively associated with self-acceptance. And then in terms of mediation, self-acceptance will mediate the heterosexism distress relationship. And then finally, we want to look at, well, do these kinds of relationships actually play out when we look at sexual orientation and victimization separately? So I would like to turn it over to Brandy.
This is our proposed model in the form of a structural equation model. As many of you know, an SEM is a system of linear equations based on a diagram that specifies the relationship between the variables. The interpretation of the coefficients is the same as in linear regression. In SEM, variables can be manifest, or meaning measurable, such as age in our model or any of the variables that are inside the rectangles, or latent factors in the oval, such as heterosexism, self-acceptance, and psychological distress in our model. Well, in words, this diagram says that heterosexism will have a direct effect on psychological distress. The path below is the mediation path, indicating that self-acceptance will reduce the effect of heterosexism on psychological distress. Our data comes from an online survey from 2013 with 417 respondents. This analysis was restricted to the cisgender respondents because the transgender students had a different microaggression scale. To address the missing data issue, we used full information maximum likelihood estimation with SAS-PROC-CALIS. That enables us to include all available data. Full information maximum likelihood is one of my favorite concepts in statistics. The way it works is, let's say a student had data on 7 out of 10 variables. Traditional maximum likelihood would just omit that student from the analysis, but full information would use the 7 variables with data. Okay. Now, the heterosexism factor was constructed from victimization or overt hostility and microaggressions. The psychological distress factor was based on the G87 anxiety scale and Cone's perceived stress scale. And self-acceptance was measured by Rosenberg self-esteem and Mayfield's LGBTQ pride scale. The student sample had more women than men, with 78% white and 68% undergraduate. The mean age was 24 years. 61% had the same-sex orientation, and close to a quarter reported androgynous to atypical gender expression. The percentages indicate the, whether students had experienced at least one incident. Over a third had experienced some type of overt victimization. Microaggressions were almost universal, close to 100%. And then on the other side, we see the descriptive statistics for the outcomes and mediators. Anxiety is on a 0 to 3 scale. Perceived stress on 0 to 4, self-esteem on 1 to 5, and pride on 1 to 4. So it's a fairly healthy sample here. Now, these are the model results. Okay. Now, call your attention to the age coefficient with a star and the gender identity coefficient with three stars over here. Negative coefficient with age indicates that older students reported experiencing less heterosexism than younger students, and the 0.2 positive coefficient on gender expression indicates that students with more atypical gender expression were experiencing more heterosexist incidents. And then in the middle, we see that 0.4 coefficient of overall heterosexism to psychological distress. That's telling us more heterosexism is associated with more psychological distress. And then the bottom, overall heterosexism to self-acceptance, minus 0.46. That's telling us that more heterosexism is associated with less self-acceptance, or equivalently, less heterosexism with more self-acceptance. And then we see another negative coefficient from self-acceptance to psychological distress, telling us that higher self-acceptance is associated with less distress. And if we multiply those coefficients together, we get positive value, and it's also statistically significant. And that tells us that self-acceptance mediates the path from heterosexism to psychological distress, which I thought was very interesting. Now, in an alternative model, we separated hostility from microaggressions, and we found some interesting things. First of all, students with atypical gender expression were experiencing more of the hostility component of heterosexism, but not more of the microaggression component. None of the other demographics were significant. And then in the lower triangle, we see this similar performing model with microaggression, self-acceptance, and psychological distress. But as far as hostility, we didn't see the same pattern, only that more self-acceptance is associated with less psychological distress. Michael?
Thank you, Brandy. So, first of all, I want to say I don't know what happened to some of our slides. They looked great on my computer. Up here, not so. So I noticed some of the alphas were on two lines, and a couple of things look like they're not showing. So if anybody wants the slides, of course, they're available through the APHA. So in terms of what we have found, of course, it's important for us to think about the fact that certain students are at increased risk for heterosexism. So atypical gender expression among all students increases risk for overall heterosexism and victimization, and that we found no particular demographics associated with experiencing microaggressions. On a positive note, of course, we find that self-acceptance can help foster students' resilience to heterosexism, that being overall, and also microaggressions, but not with respect to victimization, and in fact, not finding a direct effect with victimization and psychological distress. So we found that to be really intriguing and also not what we anticipated to find. So we think about that, and why is that? First of all, we wonder, because victimization is not happening at high levels, quite low, thankfully, is that it's infrequent, so we may be having some power issues. However, we think about it and drawing on other research, thinking about it from the point of view of how we process. What are some of the psychological mechanisms that may be at play, and what are the impacts? And we wonder if, in fact, victimization, because it's blatant, may have a short-lived effect, which may not be picked up in our outcome measures. However, whereas microaggressions tend to be more pervasive, and given the fact that they can be unintentional, intentional, and research highlights the fact that one's friend could even be perpetuating a microaggression. Phrases like, you will grow out of it, I think you will, I really like you as my friend, but you know, this is just a phase, or, you know, my religion teaches that homosexuality is a sin, but I really love you as my friend. So those kinds of messages in those close, intimate relationships may also be carrying out and performing a function, and more inclined to get under the skin, as some of the qualitative research suggests. We also think that looking at this broadly in terms of the symbolic messages that are within these pervasive microaggressions, and so they may be those ongoing reminders. So what do we do with this? We certainly need to think about how do we try to create more safe, inclusive spaces on our college campuses. So reducing heterosexism, especially subtle manifestations, would be very important in terms of fostering health and well-being. Also fostering understanding and acceptance of atypical gender expression. So when we think about trying to prevent students from being targeted, that our campuses tend to do things like safe space programs, which are around sexual orientation, not necessarily taking up gender expression. Certainly, we need to do outreach to younger students and those who have a typical gender expression in terms of trying to, we know that they're at increased risk, so doing more support and prevention services with them. And certainly, programs to build self-esteem and self-acceptance would be important, such as coming out groups, but also more broadly, campus messages that try to interrupt the heterosexist discourse. There are several limitations that we want to share. Causation cannot be determined, so we recommend longitudinal research. We did use a convenience sample. There was a high percentage of students, respondents from the state of Michigan, and our sample is relatively healthy, as Brandy pointed out. We did recruit students from online networks, so there may be some differences between those students and those who are not engaged in such networks. And for our measure of pride, we did use an adapted measure. In terms of future research, we certainly want to build on this study and others and look at other predictors of heterosexism, such as outness, but also institutional variables. So what is the role of policies, for example, anti-discrimination policies? Are there particular other mediators that may be offering some support, or moderators such as social support, LGBT programming on college campuses? We know very little about the effects of those, or students' engagement on campus such as leadership. And building on this one, and probably through qualitative research, really trying to understand more around students' processing of blatant victimization versus microaggressions. And then finally, we do need to do, building on this research, looking at the experiences of trans students as well. So thank you, and these were our funders.